Welcome to Newborn to Teen and Everything in Between, the podcast from Bespoke Family. I'm Bex.
And I'm Claire. Thanks for joining us as we tackle the ups and downs of life with children, helping you to get the best out of your time together. No rules, no judgment, just guidance. So grab a cuppa and let's get started with today's episode.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Newborn to Teen and Everything in Between. And today we are going to be continuing our chat about weaning. So we talked in our last weaning episode all about getting ready for weaning, so the kind of things you need to buy. And now we're going to be talking about the food aspect of it. So obviously the important part of weaning, giving the child the food. And that will be age 5, 6 months. Not 5 months, 6 months. We've already touched on that as well. World Health Organization guidelines.
Yeah.
6 months. So still milk is their primary source of food. Get me. I know, Claire, you don't need to be here. I'll just carry on. It'll all be fine.
Carry on. And I'm just going to sit here and relax because you've got this, Bex.
Yeah, I'm sure I haven't. So let's just make sure you stay. So we're all here. Baby's there, 6 months old, still having their milk. And then what do we do about feeding them?
Well, you're all prepped and ready, and we've talked about things like the baby-led weaning or purees or a mix of both. So you've kind of got an idea of what you want to do. We've talked about maybe the kind of cookery books to look at, to use, to guide you through. And a lot of those books now take you right from the start. So they actually give you a plan. So I know, for example, Charlotte Sterling Reed, who SR Nutrition, who's been on the podcast and things like that, her book actually takes you for the first 30 days. So lots of those are now doing that. And so getting a couple of those books, maybe even just one of those books, and just following what you think, you know, have a look at them. What do you prefer? What feels right for you as a family? And then choosing to follow that book. I think sometimes having one thing that you follow just helps. And again, you can go to social media, you can go to all those sorts of things, but it can be quite overwhelming with all the different advice. And so sometimes just having, and I would say having a book for weaning is probably the best thing to kind of do, just because you can keep flicking through it. It's got the recipes and it's your go-to. It becomes sort of your weaning Bible as such. But I think weaning, in the same way that I would always say about potty training, it's a natural part of development. It's a natural part of, you know, our existence is that we need to eat. And so we sometimes worry about this process. And I love this process. I think it's just such a great developmental kind of moment. And it can be a lovely bonding moment as well, because you're sat there and there is something about feeding people. We love, generally, if you make something for someone and they enjoy it, it's a really lovely feeling, and we enjoy doing that. And so I think the first thing to say is, if you are starting for the first time with your first child on the weaning food process, be aware there will be days, weeks maybe, where you will pour your heart and soul into making things for your children or child, and they will spit it out.
That was what I was going to say. On the flip side, you said there's something about feeding people and they love it. On the flip side, when you pour your heart and soul into it and they spit it out.
Yeah, that's heartbreaking. What's even harder is if you've made a batch of like 20 or 30 portions and you're there going, no, you need to like this. I've got 30 other portions in the freezer. You are going to like this because this is the way it's going. But that's probably the first thing that I would always say is when you are introducing solids to a baby, be very aware of their facial expressions. Their facial expressions are going to be so interesting in that they may kind of grimace, they may kind of spit it back out, they may smile, they may just keep opening their mouth for more. But what we can do is when they make a face of kind of, don't like it, what we interpret to be, I don't like it, can purely be for our babies, what is this? For the last 6 months, I've just had milk and that's all you've offered me. And I've been fine with that. Now I've got a piece of plastic or wooden spoon, whatever you're using, and it's coming in my mouth and it's got something on it that tastes nothing like the milk I've been having. It doesn't mean I don't like it. It just means I'm trying to process it. So if you've ever done like a blindfolded test of what you know, someone, you don't know what they're going to feed you, you naturally make a face of, what is it? And then when you know what it is, you either, it's gross and you don't like it, or, but for our babies, they are just going, what is this? The texture alone, they haven't had texture in their mouth before other than either a bottle or a breast, or a cup. And so it's so different for them. And they've got to, their little brain is going ping, 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 ping. What is going on? Like, you've just given me broccoli and my taste buds have gone crazy, but also I've got this funny stuff in my mouth. What's happening? And we need to be very aware of our facial expressions and body language. We need to be very relaxed, smiling. We may even have some food next to us. Even if our baby's in first tastes, have some things there for you to eat so that they are seeing that process that when I eat, you eat. And it doesn't mean you have to have a full-on meal, but you can have some bits that just so that they go, oh, so you eat too, I eat, and we take it in turns. And as your child gets older, what you will find is if you keep doing that, it does mean it slows you down on putting, especially if you're doing puree foods and spoon foods. If you are sat there with nothing else bar feeding the baby, what can happen is you feed very fast. It's just a next one, a next one, a next one. Whereas if you have to pause to pick up something for you to eat, again, it's turn taking in its very, very simple form. It's that basic table manners, like someone eats, you take turns, you have a conversation. You, again, very important to chat whilst you're feeding. What we can often do is be like, right, another spoon there. Yep. But it's actually talking about it. Oh, you're having some carrot. Carrot, you know, oh, look, it's so orange. That's, you know, orange is like this and that. And so you start to talk. It can be a great language builder, but trying to make sure that it's kind of an enjoyable process for both of you. Now, there are going to be times where they do spit it out. One of the most challenging phases is when they learn to blow raspberries, basically, with anything that's in their mouth. And they think it's hilarious when broccoli, carrot, whatever goes flying. But again, it's all learning about that texture, what goes on, what's that in my mouth. They push it forward, they're swallowing it. So it is a process that takes a lot of learning and developing. But if they do kind of not kind of maybe pull back or keep their mouth shut because maybe they're not particularly enjoying it because they don't understand the taste and things like that, keep going with introducing it. So it might be that day it's not the right thing, but then you might introduce it another day and you might add it to something else and keep going like that. But what we don't want to do is be kind of forcing any kind of feeding onto them. We don't want to be forcing, you know, we try every distraction technique under the sun. but be very careful with that, because ultimately, is our baby trying to tell you something? Maybe they just don't fancy it that day. Maybe they've got a bit of tummy ache. Maybe they're just not in the mood. Maybe they're overtired. It can be a huge range of things. And we need to read their body language, because again, all these skills are for future. So what we set now about their approach with food is how they will approach it for, you know, for time to come. And so making sure it's positive, making sure that, you know, if they turn away, they clamp their mouth, okay, we just pop the bowl down, pop the spoon down. I think, you know, you don't want any more.
But at the end of the day, they're not eating to fill them up, are they? They're eating to practice how to eat. That's the difference, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think there's an element where they need that extra, you know, they get to a stage where they are hungry and things like that. But there will be days where they eat lots, and there will be days when they don't. It depends on what they're doing that day. So if you've been swimming, like I always say, swimming, like baby sensory classes, all those sorts of things, they make them hungry because they're very stimulating, particularly swimming. We all know swimming makes everyone hungry.
Yeah, we all want a Mars bar from the from the vending machine.
But it's just thinking about their activity level. You may have a child who eats really well at breakfast, not really fast at lunch, and then eats really well at dinner. You may have it the other way around. They're just not fussed on breakfast, but they eat good lunch and dinner. It really is very individual, and you start to get to know your little ones as you start to do it. But I think taking the pressure off it, the minute we put pressure on food and eating, we start to get battles. And you don't ever want to do a battle over food, because it's hard work, it's emotional, it gets very kind of emotive as well, because you're like, I just need you to eat. If you just eat, you know, and what then happens is the child's going, oh, I don't like this environment, I don't like how it feels. So when they're feeding, try and keep it as positive as possible and keep your body language as calm and relaxed as possible, and don't ever kind of feel the need to force or really keep going. And I've seen various different techniques of trying to get children to eat, but I think one of them was the time when little one had a spoon, was having like spaghetti bolognese and had enough and was done. And so the adult got the spaghetti bolognese on the spoon, dipped it in yogurt, and then gave it to little one. Now, what that did, and obviously little one's like, yogurt, I'll take it. Took it, but suddenly got a mouthful of yogurt and spaghetti bolognese.
Ooh.
Now, that little one's face suddenly changed. And what you don't want is a child not to trust you with food. Because they are looking to us to give them safe foods. They are looking for us to, you know, if they are tricked into thinking it's one thing and it's another, that can then lead to them being like, hold on a second, that tasted really funny last time, and that yogurt wasn't what I expected. I'm not going to eat that now. And then you start that very kind of that battle. It's a yogurt. Well, it wasn't last time. And again, one of my things would be, you don't have to have a main course and a dessert. That is kind of, you know, lots of the babies that I've worked with, we just don't offer dessert. It's, they have a main course. If they're full, that's fine. They may have some fruit as something at the end, but they may even have it with their main course, you know, because what we don't want to do is have this. And I've been brought up with this, and I really am aware of it. It's this having the main course and then having sweet stuff after. And I cannot get past that as an adult. Yeah. I have to have something sweet after having something savoury. And I can't not do it. And it's because I've been brought up with it. It's just one of those things that's always been the case with a lot of people. But I would just say, be careful on going down that route if you don't need to. Because,
and that's the same really with, I have to really, really bite my tongue. And like, if the children now don't finish their food, because mm-hmm. I was always brought up, you know, a bit like you're saying, that I had to clear my plate, because of course my parents in rationing and what have you were brought up to clear their plates, you know, because there mm-hmm. wasn't much food about, you know, they didn't yeah. know how much food they'd have to eat at the next meal. And so we were brought up to clear our plates, and I really struggle if they don't finish what they've got on their plates. But I know that it's the wrong thing. But it's the same with babies, isn't it? If they don't finish it, it doesn't matter. Particularly with little babies.
Have they eaten well rather than have they eaten all of it?
All of it, yeah. Because we don't have any clue about what their tummy needs or wants, do we?
No. And there are days where, you know, you can eat a big meal. And you're like, oh, great. I was really hungry today and I really enjoyed that. There'll be other days where it's like, oh, do you know what? I've just had enough of that and I can't eat anymore. And one of my things, you know, lots of times you have to eat all of that before you can have dessert.
Mm.
Again, a very careful management of that, because what you can typically then find is you're like, right, five more mouthfuls and then you can have. And so again, that mentality comes, okay, if I eat some of this, I get nice stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas really all food should be nice stuff. So does it need to be a big thing? If they've eaten well in their main meal, then can they have a yogurt? Yes, would be my answer. Mm-hmm. They don't have to clear their plate in order to do it. They don't need to have this many mouthfuls of that. Because one of the things you never hear anyone say is, like with dessert, well, you've asked for that and you haven't eaten all of it, so you need to eat another five mouthfuls. It's just like, if they don't finish it, fine.
Yeah.
It's fine for the dessert stuff, but it's not okay for the savoury stuff. And so again, that all that stuff kind of is going around.
It does, and it goes in their brain, doesn't it?
It sets it in there. And do you know what? We're all going to do things that we'll say it. Like, I am absolutely guilty of in my career saying three more mouthfuls and then you can, or you know,
that's only because cooked it and you're like, you better eat it. I've put my heart and soul in it.
Yes.
That's because it's quite rare,
isn't it, Claire?
Very special
fish pie that I... and also, I can't bear fish pie. That's the other thing. You also cook things for your children that even if you don't enjoy them, again, being very careful with your facial expressions. Because one of my families, one of my bosses absolutely loved all different kinds of fish. And so loved making the fish pie was for the whole family. So it included like scallops and haddock and prawns. And I'm like, lovely. And I made it. And I actively encouraged it with the children. And yes. And then it came back and backfired on me years after, when I went round for dinner and they thought that it was my favourite meal.
Oh, no. And did they say, Claire, five more mouthfuls and you're going to...
But I ate it, because that is one of the things I've learned in my career. Just get on with it. And just try things you don't necessarily enjoy. But I'm not saying to do that for children. But I think it's just being very aware of our body language. And I know that lots of people get very worried around choking with foods. And I know that we covered that in the last podcast. But just to bring that back up. If they sense that you're very nervous around that. And also, you'll start with purees and baby led or however you want to do it. But even with puree, you're going to move through those stages as quite fast. And you're going to start getting lumpier and lumpier food. And again, if you're very anxious around that, then you need to work on that before doing it with your, you know, weaning. Because if, again, your child senses anxiety around food, not necessarily knowing what you're anxious about, but just knowing the atmosphere is anxious, that is going to potentially cause some issues as well. And one, you know, some, there's lots and lots of gadgets and things out there on the market, but I think there's, well, I know there is, there's things which are like a net, and you can put the food into the net, seal it, and it's like a, it looks like a giant kind of dummy type thing, and then they can suck the food through the net, so that it avoid the idea is it's so that the
no lumps.
Child can't choke. And again, this is personal choice, and if you decide that that's what you want to do, that's, you know, absolutely up to you, but just think about what that connection in the brain is doing of food sucked through a net. What does that actually taste like? And what, like, have you ever eaten your food through a net? No. And so for our
babies,
that
not very, that's not very great for teeth as well, is it? If you're sucking food, or is it not the same?
It's more just you're sucking on it, and it's, it, you can put broccoli in it, you can put anything in it.
Oh, I see.
And then you just suck it out. It's there's no lumps.
Oh, okay.
But it's, again, what signals is that giving to the brain of texture, taste, and everything else? And they, again, are marketed very much to the, you know, the parent who may be worried about the choking.
Do you know
gagging.
What? I knew somebody who, I mean, she wouldn't mind me telling you, I'm sure, but it was somebody who used to look after Ben and Amy. And she, her daughter, when Ben and Amy were starting, you know, she was fine with Ben and Amy, but her daughter was 7 and she was still eating purees because she had been so scared when she was younger of giving her anything with lumps in that she just didn't. So she just carried on, and then it became such an issue that her daughter just could not eat anything with lumps in, as in, like, just wasn't able to.
Because you're missing a sweet spot. But the reason we start solids and everything else and start moving through into the kind of lumpier stuff is because we, you know, eating is one of the key ways of getting all the mouth muscles working, ready to start language. And if we're not chewing, and again, chewing for our teeth and for all our mouth muscles are essential. And so if they're just, and the gag reflex is going to change as they get, it's there, and it's so strong at that age in order to get through this process. If you go way back when we were all cave people, you know, these babies had to feed. And they had to feed from the adult to the child. And the adult had to give them, you know, it might be mushed up, some of it. But they had that gag reflex because, again, they had to learn it. And so the more you move through the process and get through to lumps, you, the better it will be. And it's not being scared of that. It's moving. And the other thing I'd say is if you are batch cooking, don't batch cook extensive amounts. Because what happens is you end up with a load of stuff that's really smooth and you've moved on. Because it does move quite quickly. You're not on super smooth purees for that long. And so if that's the route you decide to go in the first place. So don't go batch cooking that's going to last 6 months, because you're not going to be on those purees for 6 months. You're going to be moving through that process.
Just going back to that funny face thing. Sometimes do they make a funny face because they're used to sucking.
Yeah.
So they're trying to get used to
yeah, eating.
Yeah.
So it's not they're confused. They're just like, what is in my mouth and what am I meant to do with it?
Yeah.
And it tastes funny. The texture's
different.
They could push
people like, how do I swallow it kind of thing. Yeah.
They're not even really, you know, aware of what they're doing. It's just the body kind of reacting to the experience.
So obviously people are going to get a book, let's say, and I agree with you about the book, because I get loads of recipes from Instagram and the websites and things. And as much as I possibly can, I print them out, because it is such a pain to try and follow a recipe from online, because you just keep flicking off or your phone turns off or whatever.
It's annoying.
It's so much better to get it on a book. Or, and if, so for example, if you wanted to get the Charlotte SR Nutrition book, mm-hmm. you could follow her in addition, because obviously she shares additional recipes and stuff. But if you've got the plan, let's say, then that obviously is really helpful. So you've got that plan and things. But what I mean, obviously that's going to tell you lots and lots of things about the kind of things that you can feed your baby and give you options about which route to go down and things that you need to avoid. And obviously we've done the choking and gagging thing with Sean, and stuff like that. So people can listen to that separately. But what shouldn't you do? You know, what things shouldn't you cook? Because when we were weaning the children, you know, there were things like we would cook stuff for us and we would then put it, you know, do batches for the children. But I'm not, you know, I'm sure that I shouldn't really have done that necessarily as it was.
Well, it depends on if you put salt and sugar in it.
Right. Okay. So that's one thing you shouldn't do. I think I probably... probably did have salt. Well, I don't know about sugar, but I probably had got salt in it.
Yeah, so salt you need to avoid. So if you're doing, like, you're making lasagna, cottage pie, whatever, it might be that you cook it all, but you then make two versions, like, and then right at the end you salt your option and you don't salt babies. But yeah, salt, sugar, those sorts of things you want to be keeping to an absolute minimum at this stage. And you want to be making sure that their food is varied. You know, babies love flavour. So don't be afraid to add kind of flavours in, textures in.
How about spice?
Some babies love spice.
Do you know what? This is so funny. Our old boss from years and years ago, she told me once that she made a chili and she did what you just said. And she was like, she was our principal of Norland College and she was a Norland nanny herself. And she made two chilies. She made one for the boys and one for her and her husband, did exactly as you said. And she got them mixed up. She gave the boys the chili one and her and her husband the, like, completely bland, no chili, no salt, and Roger obviously was like, oh, this doesn't taste of much. And the boys were like, well, this is really nice. They loved it. Obviously the salt wasn't ideal, but the spice was,
And, you know, some babies will love spice. Some babies will, like, I remember we used to do a thing where, like, our babies have, like, stewed apple with some cinnamon. But it was just different flavours and different texture. Do you give it all the time? No. But do you give it as varying different things? Yes, absolutely. And different flavours can really kind of, you know, encourage them to eat, try new things. The more you can introduce, the better it is.
It's a silly thing to say, really, when you think babies in different cultures will just eat the food of the different culture, and different cultures eat so many.
And you have to remember, if your baby has breastfed, the likelihood is they will be experiencing different flavors through your breast milk.
That's so true.
And but again, our babies across the world are eating flavors and spices and
I'm pretty sure I was weaned on red wine with my mum.
I'd love to say that's probably not true, but it probably is. So
anyway, sorry,
but just an aside. Introduce those, you know, flavors, textures, because very often they don't enjoy bland food. So with that, kind of brings me on to pouches. So pouches have a place for some people, you know, for a lot of people when they travel and things like that, it is much easier. Lots of people kind of prefer to have that, particularly if you're traveling abroad and you're not sure what the food will be like abroad. But to be using pouches on your everyday, I think has to come with an element of caution. Mm-hmm. And that is purely said from the fact that if you look at how long those products can be on the shelves for, there has to be a process in that that means that it's been heated to a certain degree. It's got certain things in it to make sure it doesn't go off. It also is mass produced. So again, being quite conscious of that. And sucking something out of a pouch isn't great for teeth, but it is also not what we all do around the table.
Mm-hmm.
So learning about a fork and a spoon, learning about then developing that into a fork and a knife, and we, you know, those basic skills. But if we are encouraging to have a cottage pie out of a pouch and it's quick and easy, that then becomes that kind of, it becomes so quick and easy that we do it. And then what happens is when we try to introduce normal food, it is often refused because it has texture.
Mm-hmm.
It has a very different flavour and it has very different colours, because I've struggled to find a pouch that doesn't come out pretty much orange or brown. Or something like that.
Yeah.
They're all very similar. Now, this is not in any way about shaming anyone or being like, oh no, don't do pouches. You know, like I said, pouches have a place for certain families and for certain times, but just be very aware that if they are given at each and every meal, to then introduce kind of normal food is going to be more challenging, because...
And is it better if you did have it, when and if you did use a pouch, would it be better to decant it as well into a bowl to use and...
Yep, and with a spoon.
And use with a spoon,
and warming it up. Again, what can also happen with a pouch is we don't warm it up. It's an on-the-go thing. So
you kind of get a cold
room temperature cottage pie, or a warm a room temperature chicken korma. Just again, the kind of temperature of something, the cooling it down, all those sorts of things. Also, preparing food and heating it up and then cooling it down, it encourages patience. That it's not just like that for food. Again, it's all about kind of teaching around, what are we wanting our children to know about food? It takes time to prepare. We have to prepare it. So we want to start encouraging, you know, even very young babies that I've looked after, if they're sat in their high chair, I'd pull them round and they could see me chopping, they can see me. And as they get older, I start encouraging them to join in. They need to know how food is prepared.
Yeah.
Because if everything is instant, then that's not a true reflection of
do you think that, I mean, I've heard mums, dads say that their children don't like their food. They would they prefer to have pouches.
But they will, because pouches have more sugar and more salt in them.
Do you think they have salt in them too? I mean, I know they have. They just have flavourings. Yeah.
They're going to have something in... Well, salt's a natural preservative.
Right, yeah. So it's...
so it's going to have a form of something in there.
Yeah, something... A preservative, yeah.
And
yeah,
so...
it's a bit like kind of ready meal type kind of esque stuff, isn't it? Yeah.
Well,
I mean, there is a programme, isn't there, that's just weirdly, the day we're recording this, come out on BBC... iPlayer, a BBC investigation into pouches. I mean, we were going to talk about it anyway, but it's just interesting. So we'll link that in the show notes so that if you are interested in, you know, finding out a little bit more about that. But it was quite a thorough investigation, scientific kind of look into all of the different types of pouches that there are, and
I remember,
nutritional value and stuff.
When I was lecturing, and I used to do a lecture on children and food.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
And I, you know, I don't know if anyone listening who's one of my old students will remember, but we did a tasting of pouches.
Yeah, I remember
We also did a whole thing on how much sugar do these things have in them. And we also looked at the packaging. Mm-hmm. And you've got packaging that tells you that it has all the nutrients in it. You have packaging that tells you it's good for brain development.
That it tastes like homemade. No, it doesn't do that. It definitely doesn't do that, no.
And there was a lot in that that we, you know, we looked at the packaging, and some of the packaging says from 4 months. And as you mentioned at the beginning, the directive is 6 months for starting solid. So why are we allowed to have stuff that is packaged for 4 months plus? The fruit pouches are really quite high in sugar. Mm-hmm. Whenever you kind of make, if you blend up fruit, I think one of the phrases I always used to say in that lecture was, it's the whole fruit and nothing but the whole fruit.
Mm.
The minute you blend a fruit, you change the sugar content in that fruit. And so hence why, if you do smoothies and things, you should always add things like kale or spinach or something like cucumber, those sorts of things to neutralize out the sugar. Just a pure fruit smoothie is going to be very high in sugar because the fruit's been blended.
Mm.
And so I would always say, give a banana, give strawberries, raspberry as a whole before that sugar content is changed over blending it. Now, obviously blend it and make it a healthy version, but the pouches are blended fruit. And so they are going to be, and you are then sucking them through.
And it says no added sugar, which kind of, if you look at it, you go, oh, okay. It's a bit like squash that says no added sugar, isn't it? And you go, okay, but it still has sugar in it.
Doesn't say no sugar.
Yeah. No.
And you're then sucking that through and it's hitting the teeth.
Some of the statistics on that are huge. You know, babies are having teeth extracted.
We've got horrendous dental issues. And it, you know, and that's not just down to pouches, but it's pouches play a part, and then it's down to all the other kind of things that we put in babies' bottles, all those sorts of things, and food, you know, things like giving raisins as a snack.
Yeah.
Really, raisins should be given with a main meal, not as a snack, because they sit very much into the teeth and then start to cause cavities, because you have a snack and then that's it. Whereas if it's in a main meal, you tend to eat it with something else and it dislodges it, and you also don't want your child to be continually grazing.
No.
One, because they don't eat good meals because they're grazing, but two, every time your little one's eating, the saliva in your mouth obviously works to break down the plaque and everything, so it causes, and so your plaque your saliva is continually fighting to try and save your teeth. And so if you can neutralize that out and have your breakfast, maybe a morning snack, lunch, afternoon snack, dinner, you don't even need those two snacks dependent on the age, but it is not allowing this kind of grazing and encouraging things such as sitting at the table, and that we don't get down from the table unless we finished, and things like not introducing screens as distraction.
Well, and people food. And sitting down together, even if it's not your dinner time, sitting down together with your little one to eat, even if you just eat something little, like you said earlier, because you it might be too early, because for some families it is too early because somebody might not be home from work or, you know, that kind
we
of
we used
thing.
To do, you know, in the families I've worked with, we used to just sit and Mum and I might have a cup of tea and we'd have, you know, some little things to nibble on. And those things the children could also have if they wanted. So it might be like crudités and stuff like that. And they could take them if they wanted to as well. So that it was like a sharing plate. But we were still sat there and it was still a sociable kind of moment. When you are sat there and you're eating on your own and there's people walking around you, you don't eat the same.
No.
And so our children don't either.
No. And things like having the telly on in the background, that's kind of a no. Not a no, because that sounds really like, that's a no. Because it's not like, that sounds really, but it's, in an ideal world, it's not ideal. That's a really weird thing to say.
We want to encourage conscious eating.
Yeah.
And so conscious eating is looking at what's in their plate or in their bowl and putting it in their mouth and consciously being aware of the flavour and the texture and all of those sorts of things. When we are distracted by a screen, the food goes in and you're not listening to your body. So you can keep eating.
So actually you might finish your plate.
Yeah.
Even if you don't need to.
And you might then be like, oh, I still want some more. But then if you leave it a little bit, you're actually quite full, but you haven't noticed what you're doing. You know, we on a Saturday night will sit on the sofa and have dinner because it's Saturday night. And there are times where you finish a meal and you go, ooh, that was quite a lot. And I'm still hungry. And you're like, I'm not still hungry. I just haven't paid attention to what I'm eating. Whereas if you go out for a meal, very often you might have a starter, you get to your main course and you're like, whew, I'm actually quite full. And that's because you've taken your time.
That
you've
is been so quite true.
Consciously eating. And then you still find room for dessert, of course. Goes without saying. But you are much more aware of what you eat when you go out for dinner.
That is true.
And I will always say, if you have people for dinner, like a dinner party, and you have some, this doesn't apply to you, Bex, pretty much everyone else, but like a cheese board at the end of the evening.
No, don't like cheese.
And it's just there, and you've got like crackers, and you've got the cheese, and you've got, you know, and you're all sat around chatting. Very often, everyone will go, oh my goodness, we've just eaten all that.
And you don't realise.
And you don't even notice you've done it because everyone's just picking at it. And that can be the same for our children in a good way, is if we have that stuff in the centre of the table and everyone just takes from it. And it's a sociable thing that we sit and we chat with our children about our day and what's going on and what are our plans and all those sorts of things. It then becomes that sociable time. And that can even be with our babies. So trying to have those times where you just go, oh, and today we went to the, and we, you know, and tomorrow we're going to, you may feel like you're talking to yourself a lot.
But do you know what? It also gives you, I always found this, that it, although sometimes you think, I haven't got time for this, I just need them to eat because we've got to do bath time, we've got to do this, we've got to do that. But sometimes because you force yourself to sit and do it, and like you say, talk and maybe have something for yourself and maybe have a cup of tea while they it does give you 5 minutes or
it does.
You know, like 15 minutes or whatever it is to just to have for yourself. And although it isn't,
but it's connection.
Yourself, it kind of is. Exactly.
And so one of the things we always say is have, you know, 10 to 15 minutes of good connection per day. Now, if you've just
and you
got
haven't got your
nursery,
phone, have you? Probably,
no?
Because
well,
you're sitting.
Ideally, you haven't.
You shouldn't have,
So, for example, if your little one has been at nursery all day and this is, you've got home sitting down and they might just need something else before you start the bedtime bath time routine. Sitting down and just sitting there chatting to them, it's that form of connection that then leads you on to the rest of that process. Because we all know what bath time, bedtime routine feels like. It can feel quite a daunting aspect at the end of a day if everyone's a bit tired. But if you sit down, have a cup of tea, or, you know, whatever you do with your little one and just having that conversation and that chat, it then becomes part of their routine. So they know what to expect. Like your two know to absolutely expect dinner, that everyone sits around the table and that you have a conversation. And they still do it now. And that's still a part of their routine, and they're 18. So it becomes part of that. And I think, you know, having good table manners, being able to hold a conversation across the table, enjoying food and having a positive association with food are all key things that can be established at this.
It's amazing actually, isn't it, how much now we've spoken through it, how many things are linked with that, and how, but like you say, there's so much control that can be taken over food from a child. So you've just got to really just be so relaxed about it, and that's all
so
that you
relaxed.
Need it's all you need to be, isn't it? You just need to be relaxed about it.
But if you think, sometimes we can think of meal times as being a process, something we have to get through. And instead, you can always switch it around and go, it's a massive learning opportunity because it's a language development, it's cognitive development, because you often talk about things that, you know, did you know? Have you heard? You know, oh my goodness, look at this, it's this, you know, a carrot grows, you know, rabbits eat carrots or whatever. You start, all those conversations come typically around the table. I wonder where potatoes grow. Do they grow in the ground? Do they grow on a tree? You know, all of those sorts of things. I've got one family at the moment and the little ones are trying different types of fruit, and then one of the children's like, I want to try spicy, and so it's now like trying different chili type sauces and stuff. But that's purely because at the table it's always been about, let's just try it, let's just see, do you like it, do you not like it? Okay, it's okay to not like something, it will be here again, and we might say to you, try it again, but it doesn't, you know, if you've given it a go today and it's not cool, that's fine. But the pressure, when we start to put pressure on us and the child for food, is where that power struggle comes. And it's a tricky one.
Well, I think we have talked through weaning quite sufficiently.
It is one of my favourite things.
I feel my mother should have listened to this a long time ago. But never mind. I did survive.
But things change. So things are developed.
Oh, yeah, they do.
And
they have.
We're all going to have different, you know, some children will come from absolute foodies. I do remember, one quick story is, I remember going to look round a school with a family. And the parent turned around to one of the pupils and just said, oh, you know, how do you like coming to the school? Yes, and everything else. And the parent phrased it of, what's your favourite meal? And this child said, meaning, what's your favourite school meal? But this child then responded with just what their favourite meals were. And he's like, well, it kind of depends. I like sushi, but I couldn't have that. And he's like, but a really nice steak can always go down well. And I remember looking at the parent and we just came out and I went, wow, that child, did you ever think a child would say sushi and a nice steak?
A nice steak, yeah.
It was the way you went, or a nice steak.
How old were they?
He was about 7, but obviously he'd heard that from a parent or an adult around them. And it was just a conversation. And I always remember that because it was just so casual, just like, just a nice steak.
And do you know what? Yeah, that's good. That's a good choice.
Yeah. And so sushi. Funny. But again, did I even get offered sushi as a child? No.
Or
is it something
steak?
I've started eating recently? Yes.
I probably told this. Did I tell the story of the last episode about the liver? I don't know if I did. My mum told me, in fact, I think I was talking to my dad about it last time I saw him. My mum decided I needed to try liver. And so I had the liver and I did not like the liver because it wasn't like liver now. You'd get liver in a restaurant, which I wouldn't even try it now. I got the liver and I put it in my mouth and she told me that I was not allowed to spit it out. And I kept the liver in my mouth. I wouldn't swallow it. She wouldn't let me spit it out. So I kept it in my mouth until it dissolved. That's my mother's weaning method. There you go.
And on that note, to all listeners, that is not how you do it.
But there you go. There's the control. I mean, I absolutely... And now, liver. Oh. But the control there was I would not... She wouldn't let me spit it out. And she was really cross. My mum could get cross. And I really was like, well, I'm not swallowing it. Which was stupid, really. I mean, how stupid was that?
Because actually you had that taste in your mouth for much longer.
A long time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, how silly. But this is the thing. You've got complete control over what you do with it. Mm-hmm. I should just have spat it out, really, and endured the wrath, but I was too scared.
But some children will hold food in their mouth, particularly meats, because they can, the texture, and they can chew it to a point where then they, like, hamster cheek it. And they don't know what to do with it. It can happen, but to say don't spit it out and swallow it,
it's not the advice, is it, of bespoke family?
Not really.
No, as Amy would say, that wouldn't be bespoke advice, would it?
It wouldn't be bespoke. No, it wouldn't be bespoke.
Anyway, on that note, thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.
That's everything for today. Thanks for listening. If there's something you'd like us to talk about, we'd love you to get in touch and let us know. Find us on Facebook and Instagram at Bespoke Family, or head to our website. The links are in our show notes.
Make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss the next episode, and please give us a rating or review if you like what you hear. We're Bex and Claire, and we'll be back soon with another episode of Newborn to Teen and Everything in Between. See you then.